nightmare.
Hello and welcome to Cinema Subculture, the podcast where we discuss everything strange, obscure and downright messed up in the world of movies. My name's Gary.
And I'm Simon.
And welcome to episode 32. We are discussing David Cronenberg's Crash from 1997.
We should probably set out, Gary, saying that this is our second attempt at a Skype episode.
Mm-hmm.
First attempt at a full Skype episode.
Yeah.
So bear with us, people. We are still working out the kinks. Hopefully this turns out all right. Little plug before we start. I want to suggest everyone goes and listens to the Film Jive podcast, which our very own Gary guest stars on for Lars von Trier's Nymphomaniac. Really good episode. I definitely encourage you guys to go and listen to it. So we're looking at Crash. Do you want to give us a little rundown, Gary?
The film follows a couple played by James Spader and Deborah Carr Unger, who are sort of in a cold relationship. And James gets involved in a car accident and sort of becomes obsessed with car crashes. And the sort of two of them become drawn into a world of these kind of people who have sort of sexual perversions about car accidents and things like that. So, it's a film that's been called Beyond the Bounds of Depravity.
Wow.
And the point at which liberal society must draw the line. So it's quite a controversial one in its day.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I was quite surprised by the content, to be honest, from a film from 96, 97. Yeah, I mean, I haven't seen a lot of David Cronenberg's films. What about you, Gary? Have you seen many?
I've seen maybe 6 or 7, which is about half.
Oh, you're by, you quite like The Fly.
I did. I'm not a massive fan of his work as a whole. Like, there's films that I love, like this one, The Fly. Sometimes his stuff gets a bit, goes kind of a wee bit silly, just the kind of nature of the effects and stuff he uses. He's an interesting filmmaker, I think.
I've only really seen I've seen parts of Videodrome.
Oh yeah.
I've seen Scanners. Mm-hmm. I've seen parts of The Fly as well. I saw both parts of The Fly and Videodrome, you know, when I was younger, and never really kind of got into them. But this was the first like kind of time I'd seen Crash.
Mm-hmm.
It's quite a stark film.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, from the outset, it's, as you say, it's, the couple are very cold, and both they seem to be very sexualized and quite cold towards that, obviously, open relationship, you know. The dialogue I found quite hypnotic in the beginning.
It's very stilted. Almost, it's not naturalistic at all.
No, especially Deborah Carr Unger. It's just like statements almost that she makes, like, you know, which it didn't put me off. It just kind of drew me into what is this, you know, going to be about. I'd say the overall tone of the film reminded me of, and the way it was made and stuff like that, reminded me of Videodrome a little bit. Scanners.
Oh,
I was going to say the look of it, even though it's like it's made like what 15 years later almost. It reminded me of that quite a bit.
I mean, in some ways I was thinking it's a kind of difficult film to talk about because the way it's directed, Cronenberg is completely detached. He doesn't make any kind of moral stance. There's no judgments on the characters. It's very just kind of here as this is what they do. And the way he shoots the film as well, a lot of the time the camera's quite far removed in terms of distance from the action. It's just these kind of subtle tracking shots where it's gliding past, sort of like the view you would get from a car. It's kind of sort of voyeuristic quality to it. A lot of the film is just about, it's kind of superficial in the sense it's about surface, it's about shiny things, cars and that. So in some ways, there's not much to get to grips with, in a sense, even though you might say what's in the film, the content is quite shocking, but it's hard to get much of Cronenberg's perspective on it because he's so kind of removed. I think that's intentional because he's not wanting you to invest emotionally in the characters. He's wanting you to kind of observe them, I think, from sort of again, a Brechtian distance, yeah. You might say.
It's a hard film to kind of get to grips with, right enough. It's because you don't really know necessarily at any point what any of the characters want, really. Mm. You know, it's quite cloud. You know, it's right up to the kind of, you know, the last scene where we kind of find out maybe where some of the scene, you know, the intimidation scenes almost from the Vaughn character.
Right, aye.
Like it comes into like play where it's almost been like, yeah, that's been what they've been wanting anyway. You know what I mean? There's a lot of scenes in it that you don't know whether, like, that character for me went within the film from being like the antagonist of the film. Like, well, he was really the antagonist of the film, but like you didn't know where he was standing for a lot of time. You didn't know where, like, James Spader's character was standing with the Vaughn character, because it seemed to be they were, you know, with each other and they had the same purpose. Then they would have this opposing purpose where it looked like he was trying to hurt his wife, I don't know. And you know, it was quite weird. You didn't really know where it was going to go or what the characters were after.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Holly Hunter, her character, like, you know, that the right up from the initial crash, it's really strange and kind of unnerving. Like, you just don't know where it's going to go when they meet in the corridor in the hospital. It seems like she's like totally disgusted with him and stuff, as you would imagine maybe she would be with him being effectively the cause of the crash that kills her husband. It's just a hard one to pin down. Like, you know, you don't know what's going on.
What makes it quite compelling is the fact that it is so strange, like the way the characters act. They speak in these kind of strange sort of short sentences, like, and you get the impression that these characters, like, just don't give a fuck. Like, they're kind of so kind of numbed by society and sort of conventional morals or whatever, that they're just completely shut off. And it's got quite a kind of that kind of transgressive kind of tone, which makes it quite unusual. It's not like it's quite an unusual film. So I think you're always kind of watching and say, like, what are these characters going to do? Because there's no really any way to kind of gauge it with conventional film narrative. There's not a lot happens in the film, but it's just the characters get sucked into this sort of strange world of car crash fetishism, and it just kind of plays out like that.
I mean, it's strange because, like, the kind of most human that a character, or, you know, natural almost like reaction you get is just after James Spader's had his crash. It's almost as if he's shaken out of his kind of apathy for life, or you know, disenchantment with, as you say, with society. For like maybe 5 minutes of the film, you know what I mean? He seems to be, you know, he's asking where his car is, his wife's still there, being very much just aloof and kind of, as you say, stilted statements and sentences, and he seems quite concerned and almost kind of shaken into reality. And then when they're talking about the, you know, it seems like there's more traffic on the road, and she tries to kind of engage and tries to give him a hand job, you know, and he's like, you know, pushes her away or whatever. It seems like he's kind of almost been shocked into the real world. You know what I mean? But only until he really meets Holly Hunter's character at the pound where the cars were being kept. Because then it seems to kind of, he goes back into like his kind of his own little world, really, but from a different angle.
Yeah.
Via the kind of, as you say, the car crash fetish. As for like the kind of like body horror, or, you know, the kind of stuff that Cronenberg does, what did you think of it in this film? I thought it kind of it seemed quite like a lot of the kind of, even like the kind of, I mean, there was some like three different couples having sex within the first like 10 minutes or less, you know what I mean? So it seemed quite like something that would be deemed quite shocking, even shocking, you know, on the edge of kind of mainstream even today, you know, but we're almost 20 years out now. So it seemed still kind of to be pushing some barriers with, you know, the content. And when it came to the kind of the wounds and things like that, and the sexual activities with wounds, and you know, so it was quite interesting to see how I felt that was quite strong element of the film.
Well, I think the way it kind of treats the sex as a whole is quite clinical. Like Roger Ebert called it a pornographic film without pornography. Which is strangely, I remember finding some of it quite kind of, not necessarily shocking, but kind of quite hard hitting the first time I seen it. That was quite a while ago, maybe about 2000 or something like that. I think I seen it on TV. Yeah. But yeah, I don't know if I'd call it erotic or not.
It's kind of interesting because like the. I'd say that there's I'm trying to think now. As you say, everything's treated very cold and clinical. I'd say the kind of the most het up it gets in terms of sex scenes, or you know, there's no actual nudity in this scene, but like James Spader and Elias Koteas when they're in the car, that's the most het up it seems to get. You know what I mean? You know what I mean? Because that seems as actually, I don't know, for some reason that seemed a little more passionate than.
Right.
Or maybe not passionate, but like, you know, heat at the moment, than some of the other stuff that seemed to be, they're getting off on other things. Mm-hmm. Whereas that, they just got tattoos, okay, maybe, but there was no like car crash immediately before that or anything.
Right.
But I don't know that when I was watching, I was thinking, oh, that's actually, you know, I think the most we've seen the characters kind of get into sex, you know, rather than like just like. I mean, James Spader and his wife are having sex at one point, and she's just asking him if he's seen the other guy's penis, and like, has he sucked his dick, and have you ever sucked a dick? You know what I mean? It doesn't seem as if it's like, she's not really seem to be trying to get him into sex, in particular, you know what I mean? It seems to be kind of like, when you fucking shut up. No, hopefully, all right? I maybe will one day. Just shut it.
Yeah.
I'm trying to finish and get to sleep. I've got work in the morning. You know? But, I mean, what was your thoughts on that? Like, I thought that... I didn't really expect that to come because it had been kind of signposted beforehand with her seemed to be getting off on the idea of it.
What are you talking about? The homosexual scene?
Yeah. So, like, you know, I didn't necessarily think that was going to like come from those characters, but...
All right. Well, I don't know. It just seems like... Every person in the film, it's kind of like orgiastic. Everyone's
going. I guess. It didn't seem out of place, but it was just like, right. Because they did kind of signpost that I felt like a little bit, you know, with the kind of. It made you think almost it was coming.
Right.
I guess, but before, but I mean.
Mm. Yeah, what do you think of the whole kind of ideas of the film as a whole? Obviously, that's from the novel to a certain extent as well, but I think I'm kind of sympathetic to the kind of ideas, but I don't know if the kind of metaphors that Ballard's using are that well... Like, I haven't read the book, so I can't really comment too much, but it's obviously... he's talking about how the car is like... I think there's a quote here... the key image of the 20th century is a man in the motor car. It sums up everything, the elements of speed, drama, aggression, the junction of advertising and consumer goods with the technological landscape. So I think he's talking about how like the two main protagonists, they're kind of so isolated from each other that they can't really engage emotionally in sex anymore. So that's like the kind of metaphor of the individual in the car and the kind of metal box of modern technology, and we're all kind of isolated. Which I kind of, I don't know if it's that profound an idea, but I'm kind of sympathetic to, like the modern world of sort of scientific reason. It becomes a bit clinical, and it leads to that kind of postmodernism where everyone's kind of detached from each other a wee bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, like, you look at the what we're doing now, you know, like on the internet, like chatting to each other online, and the Facebook revolution. It's kind of this a similar thing of the kind of detachment from having to be emotionally involved with people, you know. It's kind of this. It's kind of an extension of what you're saying. How well is it done in this film? How well did he get that idea? I don't know. I mean, do you think it comes across strong in this
Not
film?
really. Well, that's the thing I was trying to ponder. There's really not a lot of meaning to draw from the film.
No.
But I don't know if that's because intentionally it was very, it's like the film is directed very subtly. And obviously the detachment that's intentional we were talking about. So Cronenberg isn't going to kind of hit you over the head with the kind of message of the film. But I don't know if any of those ideas come through. But maybe that's kind of looking at it the wrong way, because maybe it's more just about, not specifically about the car crash stuff, but more just about sort of human about obsession and perversion. I've kind of read that today.
I get that. Yeah, just like once as you say, obsession and pushing everything and not giving a shit about anything but what they want.
I mean, Ballard and what he said about his own book has been quite ambivalent, because sometimes he says that the book's meant as a cautionary tale, so that's in that sense is kind of condemning the modern world. But at the same time, he's also contradicting himself and says stuff like the violence. It's kind of innate to human psychology. He's talking about how, like, the modern, like, people love to watch car crashes and violence in films. So he wanted to explore the idea that is that kind of exhilaration, sort of within our own kind of animal brain, and is it do we now kind of is there a link between sex and that kind of thrill we get when we watch a car crash on film or whatever.
I mean, like that. What you're talking about there takes me straight to that scene where they're driving past the car crash, and
Aye.
the Vaughn character grabs his camera and starts getting out. And I mean, that's literally somebody with a smartphone,
Yeah.
like going mental and taking video and whatever. And so I'd say that's definitely. It definitely has parallels to the modern day. You can see that that's tracking and got worse. Or, magnified to where we are now.
Yeah, Ballard, I think, was quite surprised that the reaction the film got, compared with, he was saying, well, look at Scorsese's films or something. People love violence, they sort of give it critical acclaim. But I don't know if the difference in this film is that, one, there's no plot, which turns people off, and then two, just like the coldness of the direction, plus the kind of the strangeness of what's happening, the kind of unusual characters, just kind of automatically shuts people down and turns them off. I don't know.
I can definitely see that. It is. It's not something. I don't know. It felt, as I said, like it did have a similar feel to something like Scanners and that. I think it felt like out of time with
Right.
itself. It didn't feel. Like, I mean, it's hard to remember like back in the 90s what films like felt like when you watched them. But this didn't feel like a 90s film. I
Right.
think it felt as if it kind of. Could have been set in the 80s almost, or you know what I mean? It didn't feel necessarily where it was set, so I think that might take people out of it a little bit as well. But definitely, the character's not having like clear like kind of motivation. I think is something that may be hard for people to get into. But I thought the performances were so good that really like draws you in. And you kind of just want to go with the characters because you don't kind of you don't really need to know what they want. It's just, it's fun watching them and kind of go through these experiences and stuff like that. And it is kind of hypnotic, especially at the beginning with the couple and the way they're talking and stuff. And then after the crash, you're just kind of waiting to see what the reaction this guy has to the crash. And I guess like you would kind of, in a modern or a mainstream Hollywood film, it would kind of be the thing that turns this guy round on his life and maybe, you know, he dumps the wife or whatever and gets his life, quotation marks, in order, you know. So it's kind of interesting where this goes, and it's literally just him continuing on what he was doing with a slight deviation on what gets him off. And maybe that is like what you're saying about the, you know, the voyeuristic nature of people, especially even today. It's whatever gets you off, you know. Maybe not even like right to sex, just like kind of like the whole obsession with celebrity. With, you know, I mean, that can be described as literally a car crash. Some of those stories. So I didn't realize Casey Jones from the Turtles was in this film.
Oh yeah, Elias Koteas.
Yes, I've always quite liked him as an actor. Like, you know, I've only seen him in a few films, but I always think he reminds me of a young Robert De Niro. I thought he was quite like that, and that there's a scene where James Spader and him are driving in the car. I can't remember where they're going. It might be just after. I think it may be just after they do the James Dean crash.
Right.
And I just thought he looked, you know, the way he was. I don't know. His choices he was making, his performance were very like a young Rob De Niro, and even his voice at times, you know. I've only really seen him in this, and he's in Exotica as well, the a Tom McGowan's film.
Right.
I've seen him in that, and obviously the Turtles films, and he's in Let Me In, the remake One In. All right in that. I don't know much else to say about that film, but. What did you think of the other performances in the film?
I thought it was overall kind of a great cast. Obviously, I think a lot of them were just wanting to work with Cronenberg. Obviously, it was a controversial novel, so it was kind of probably obvious that the film was going to be controversial. So that's quite a brave thing for like Holly Hunter or someone to do it. Saying the performances are great, it's funny because they're so subtle, but there's not much there.
It's almost kind of like the antithesis of what you would, you know, say is like an engaging performance,
right,
because it's quite like impenetrable. You can't really get into the characters necessarily. Mm. You know, so it's kind of hard to, like, instead of like them making you feel like you know them and can engage with them, it's kind of the opposite, and you're kind of like alienated a little bit by them. But I think that makes them all the more kind of alluring. You know, like you just want to watch them almost.
Yeah.
You know?
Maybe the Elias Koteas character is the warmest in a way, even though he's kind of the antagonist. I think he's the one that gets to express the most emotion. I think.
Yes.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah. That's what I'm gonna say. He seems to run the most on, like, his gut.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know. What, you know, the whole culture of recreating car crashes. What is that a real thing?
Not as far as I know.
It's quite interesting it was put together. I thought, like, you know, and then like, why does his buddy go ahead and do the crash himself? Was that just a theory, or does he just think he's done it himself, or is that him imagining him?
If he does do it himself, I guess he's just, maybe he was trying it out, or maybe he just thought he was too eager to get it done.
He got it done pretty perfectly, exactly as it was described. So it seemed like, when I was watching it, I was like, is this him, you know, imagining this?
Or maybe it was a suicide attempt to recreate it. I guess that's about, there is a kind of obsession with celebrity death, maybe car crashes especially.
Yeah,
maybe that's less true.
I guess so. I mean, like, the James Dean one was pretty iconic. Mm. It seems to be more like plane crashes you kind of, you know, remember, like, you know, like celebrities. Can you think of any other famous car crashes?
The ones they talk about in the film, the Jane Mansfield, uh-huh. Grace Kelly.
Sure. Oh yeah, Grace Kelly, I forgot, yeah.
JFK, they kind of talk about that as a car crash in some way.
But yeah, I don't know, but the unless the, you know, it's just made up. Is it in the book, the car crash thing?
I don't know. I haven't read it. But, it's about, because the car is like a more accessible vehicle, like, so it's a bit more, if someone dies in a car crash, then it's a bit more, like, it affects you more than, like, a plane or whatever.
Yes, yeah, yeah, because, yeah, that's true, uh-huh. Hmm. So, look, what's your, like, I've heard you other places, seeing you're not the biggest fan of Cronenberg, so what's, like, what do you think's your problem with Cronenberg?
I don't know if I necessarily have such a problem with them, I just, the films I've seen, there's some I really like, some that I don't like, some just think are alright. I don't know, maybe like, in terms of horror, I'm not the massive fan of the kind of, sometimes physical things, like physical effects and stuff can fall onto the, it just looks a bit silly.
I've always wanted to see some of the films we've talked about, you know, like, so like, I was wondering if there was a reason that you were not necessarily the biggest fan.
Nah, not really. I mean, there's films like Eastern Promises and what was the other one at that time? History. Yeah, I didn't care for them at all. I thought they were really bad. Just like uninteresting, dull.
Yeah.
I'm seeing these.
He definitely seems to. Well, having not seen those films, like, but like Eastern Promises, History of Violence, like A Dangerous Method, and it seems to have changed the style a little bit. You know, are these horror films or are they?
No, they've got some scenes of graphic violence, but
It seems to have changed the style a little bit.
A wee bit, yeah. I mean, I haven't seen like his most recent things, but
Well, let us know what you think, guys. I mean, if you're a big fan of Cronenberg, drop us a line. Let us know why. Recommend something for me specifically to watch, because I've not seen many of his films. I'd like to maybe check some of them out from his older stuff. I've seen Scanners, I've seen most of Videodrome. I'm just checking out a few things just now, like A Dangerous Method's got Michael Fassbender in it, and I'm really a big fan of him, and Vincent Cassell.
Dead Ringers is good. That's one I quite like.
But drop us a line, like, let us know if you, or if you really don't like him, let us know that as well. Let us know why.
Talk about, just mention the release of the film in the UK. The film was passed uncut by the BBFC, at the time there was a big it was a campaign by the Daily Mail. As you can guess, the normal culprits, who sort of, Chris Tookie, the critic for the Daily Mail, said they called the film The Point at Which Liberal Society Must Draw the Line, and they had a campaign to get the film banned. It was quite extreme. They took it to the point of like lobbying councils all over the UK to ban the film, but the only council that did actually ban the film was Westminster Council. That's how the film laws determining theatrical distribution actually work in the UK, because the BBFC has no actual legal authority over film distribution in terms of its theatrical release. It's individual councils, so they can choose to ban a film or cut a film if they choose to. But ultimately, it was only Westminster that actually did ban it.
I know there was an R-rated cut and a theatrical cut, but like, that was just a kind of DVD or home video type thing, was
in
it?
In the US.
Situation.
Yeah. Probably. I mean, I know the 18 was the full NC-17 one. So
Right. I mean, what do you think about that? I'm looking through the films that were released in that year. You know, do you think it's justified? You know, well, not justified. Do you think the worry that they had about it was any base in, like, you know, the actual content in the film? I think it does have some, you know, the graphics, sex scenes in it, you know, nothing that I think would really make you bat an eye today, but...
Not really. I mean, the idea of the film on paper is maybe more distasteful than what's in the film.
Yeah.
It's meant to challenge, and it's sort of that kind of irony that if there wasn't the reaction to the film, then it would have much more a low profile and less people would see it. But I don't know. It's that kind of problem we always have, like, on this podcast. Like, it's probably shocking to a lot of people, but we don't have that gauge anymore. We've kind of lost that a wee bit. But it doesn't warrant, compared to some of the other stuff we've done, it's fairly tame.
No, definitely. Yeah.
What's even though the ideas might be quite extreme, how it's visually depicted is fairly tame. But I think maybe some of the critical response, the negative critical response, was due to the tone of the film as much as the content. I've talked about that before, how given a moral stance on violence or whatever, if you tell us how to feel about something, then even something more extreme is more palatable to us. Whereas if it's like just cold, like irreversible or something, it seems more shocking.
Because almost the character's indifference to what's happening makes it seem even more stark and kind of like shocking, because they don't seem to be shocked by it necessarily, or you know, we're not being kind of told how to feel about what we're seeing. I mean, I really enjoyed it. I thought it was hypnotic from the start, and I enjoyed what was happening. I didn't really see, I knew kind of what the basis of the film was. I knew about the leg wound scene. I knew about the clip that's kind of in pop culture, so I knew about that scene, but I didn't really see, I couldn't guess what was happening, if you know what I mean, with the whole, I wasn't sure what was happening throughout the film, you know, with the whole, like, they're trying, as it turns out, they're trying to get her injured, effectively, by the end of the film, you know, his wife, you know, they're talking about she's fine, she's okay, like, and he's like, maybe next time, and you're not sure, like, they're trying to kill her, they're trying to, like, just get her wounded enough to need pins. How badass was that, like, knee brace he had in?
Well,
that was hefty. Like, see the one James Spader has. Like, it's like a terminator leg or something. It's crazy. It's like, oh man, it was just like so heinous. It was. I didn't like the thought of that at all. Bye bye leg. I thought the crash itself was a bit lame. I wasn't that into the actual crash at the beginning.
Right, okay.
It seemed like it was a bit too drawn out. Like, he went onto the other side of the road and he dodged a few cars, then went head into one. I don't know, for some reason it looked a bit kind of like, oh, you could have just put back out to the other side of the road again. I don't know. I expected it, when I saw it, I expected it, because he was looking down trying to pick stuff up, I expected it just to kind of happen.
Right, okay.
But that was the only thing, really. You quite enjoyed this film?
Yeah, I like it quite a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, I think what kind of draws me in, it's a kind of strangeness of it, that it's quite compelling, because it's just that the characters are not characters you see in a normal film at all. So, yeah, but I think ultimately, maybe the sort of slight problem I have with it is just not being able to pull that kind of clear meaning out. So I don't quite know ultimately how to feel about the ideas in the film, even though to some extent that's probably intentional.
Yeah.
But so it's a wee bit of a tricky one. So I definitely think it's a good piece of work.
I had a look when I was trying to find this film, like to watch it. I don't think it's been released on Blu-ray or anything like
No.
that, but I don't know. Do you think it's something that Criterion would maybe touch, or?
Because they did release it in Laserdisc
Oh, they did,
back in
right?
the day,
Oh,
yeah.
okay.
So I think it's always one that gets tossed about that on the kind of rumour mill for Criterion. They just put out Scanners in Blu-ray,
That's right,
just announced
that's right.
it. So it's possible.
Yeah, that'd be quite interesting to see. I'd like to see some like special features and things like that. See what they're making of, and maybe that would give some clear idea where he was coming up from it with it,
Yeah, there was a Cronenberg commentary on
Right,
that
on the
Laserdisc, but
Laserdisc.
I couldn't find it.
No.
Sometimes people put up MP3s of some of the old
Sure.
Laserdisc commentaries, but I couldn't find that one. But,
Cool. That's awesome. All right. Okay, to wrap up there, or okay, guys. So, like, we hope this has turned out all right, audio wise. Again, let us know. I almost said in the comments below, we're not on YouTube. We're going to be looking at another film next episode, believe it or not. Kind of a trend for us. We're going to be looking at Holy Motors from 2012. 2012? Did you say 2012 or 2012? What do you say, Gary?
2012, I think.
Yeah,
But I
2012.
like to have the freedom to fluctuate if I choose to.
Okay, right, I won't hold you to one of
Okay.
them. How do you pronounce the director's name? Is it Leo Carax? Leos?
Leos, maybe.
Right, okay, so it's a French director. So yes, it's a film that I'd like kind of blind bought the Blu-ray. It was something I was wanting to try and see when it was at GFD for a while. So yeah, we're gonna be looking at that next time. I've already seen it. Gary hasn't watched it yet. But it's an interesting film, definitely. If you guys want to check it out before you catch up with us next time, that would be awesome. And again, you can let us know what you think of that film. That'll be episode 33, will it? Yeah, unless we do any little impromptus, you never know what's gonna happen, Gary. It's all up in the air. It's all buzzing about. Before we go, have you seen anything interesting recently, like, films wise, that you want to like either say was pish or good?
I've been watching some James Bond
Oh, aye.
movies. They've been on TV.
Sure. Oh, I thought you were gonna say those ones you'd picked up.
No, I did watch some of them. I'm quite liking some of the earlier Roger Moore ones.
Oh,
I think they're
really,
just a wee bit more kind of fun. I mean, I think even overall, I think Connery's a better Bond. I just find these ones a bit more enjoyable because I think they strike a better balance. Because maybe sometimes the Connery ones are a wee bit. They haven't quite found that balance between sort of the seriousness and the kind of
Sure.
light-hearted, just entertainment stuff. And I think they do have a tendency to go on a bit long, like maybe 90 minutes should be a good.
Good time
Sometimes they
for.
drag it up to like 2 hours. And they're like, yeah, just give us the good stuff and get out of there. But
If you say fucking Bond, James Bond, one more time, I'm gonna fucking go off. No, I get what you mean.
yeah.
Did you ever see Never Say Never Again?
No.
No, the Connery film they did, like, that was kind of, or it's non-canon as it were. It wasn't made by the same company. A different company had the rights to the bot to make another that one film. I think it's a remake of Thunderball.
All right, yeah.
It's a little, well, it's more tongue in cheek. I don't know whether you'd like it because it's Connery, but it's kind of got elements of kind of the Roger Moore stuff.
Right.
Maybe worth a check out if you're kind of liking that stuff. No, I know what you mean though. Like, I watched the beginning of one of Roger Moore's Bonds. I can't remember what one it was, but it starts off and it's in his house, like he's in Bond's apartment or whatever. And his boss comes over and
Right,
is giving him
I
a
remember
mission,
seeing that. I can't remember. Was it
and
Living
he's
Let It Die, maybe?
probably
No.
I it could be yeah. And he's got like a girl in his bedroom and she sneaks out, blah blah, and it's but that seemed a little warmer. You know,
Right.
like the character and a little more easygoing. But no, I can see what you mean. I definitely agree. I don't think he's like a better Bond, but I think maybe some of the storytelling is a little easier going. in the kind of Roger Moore stuff. Cool. One thing I've really seen recently, well, I went to see, I did talk about last time, I went to see Captain America. I did talk about that last time. It was good. I liked it. I went to see Amazing Spider-Man 2. Have you caught this at your work?
I've seen a wee bit of it.
What do you think?
Meh. Don't know.
Man, it was hoaching.
Was it,
aye? I didn't like it at all. That's a lie. There was bits in it that were really good. Mm-hmm. That I thought in a different film, in a better film, would have been amazing. It's like almost like they got like 30% of it right, and the stuff they got wrong, they got right. The stuff they got right was so right that it made the stuff they got wrong so bad. You know what I mean? So it just made this like terrible film. I mean, they've got Jamie Foxx in the film as a character who becomes Electro. Spoilers, by the way, if anyone's right. And they totally set him up. The way he's playing it's not so bad. I don't feel it's his fault. But they put this crazy like music in the background, and I'm not kidding you, it's like watching Jim Carrey in Batman Forever as Edward Nygma before he turns into the Riddler. That's exactly what it's like. And he gets obsessed with Spider-Man after he saves him one time. It just felt like it was out of place in the wrong film.
Right.
And I mean, there's a bit at the end, spoilers, there's a major character death at the end, and I thought the way they handled that, the actual showing it and the way it happened was quite dramatic and well done, and kind of like, actually was like, holy shit, you know?
Right.
And it worked really well, I thought, but it just was in the wrong film. It felt like too many cooks, you know, that way. Apparently they had a whole other stuff they'd shot with different characters that would get cut out, and I don't know, it wasn't really a fun time for me at all. I'm a person who loves these like comic book films. Maybe that's the problem. Maybe it's like we've had so many, well, as a comic book film lover, like I've had so many good to really good comic book films recently that this was just not acceptable anymore, you know what I mean? So maybe that's what it was, but also it still had those kind of elements from the first Amazing Spider-Man that were like kind of, were trying to be Twilight-y.
All right.
And I've never seen Twilight, but that's what I imagine it to be.
Right.
So that can't be a good thing. Because
that was pretty good, the first one, wasn't it? Meant to be.
No, it was it was mixed reviews, you know what I mean? Okay. The stuff that worked in the first one, I guess still works in this one. But I even found, I mean, I'm a big fan of Emma Stone, acting, whatever, but I think she's loved it. And I like Andrew Garfield as well, I don't mind him, but their scenes together kind of bored me.
Oh, yeah?
I was kind of like, right, okay, and I was more interested in the stuff with Andrew Garfield and Dane DeHaan, the Harry Osborn, like Dane DeHaan was in Chronicle. I thought they were playing that character, because that was something I hadn't really seen for a while. I felt they missed the mark. The first one was criticised for being a bit too dark, a bit too going for the Nolan-esque Batman thing. I get that, but it had Twilight-y moments in it as well that was like him coming to our window and stuff like that. But it worked okay in that one because we were meant to be in high school and it was okay. But I didn't really enjoy this one at all. I've went on for far too long about it. Feel free to cut that out cut that into chunks of nope, no good, right? But yeah, just if anyone's out there thinking about wasting their money on it, because I know a lot of people's parents are wanting to the kids, maybe they'd enjoy it, to be fair. Don't see it in 3D. I never saw it in 3D, but I can recommend it. Don't see it. Okay. There you go, what an outro. So, yeah, that's us. We all good, Gary?
Yeah.
Everything in order. We will see you next time. Goodbye.
It was a nightmare.